On Wednesday evening, one of the most emotionally charged games of this NBA season is being played, and I'd wager that the majority of NBA fans outside of Indiana and Sacramento know nothing about it. Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield return to Sacramento. Domantas Sabonis takes on the Pacers for the first time since the trade, and we're going to talk about it with Locked On Pacers host Tony East right here on Locked On Kings.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. Time for another episode of Locked On Kings.
Hello and welcome into Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season and all off season. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I'm a Sacramento sports reporter and producer for ABC 10 News. And I know I've said it before, one of the best parts about being a part of the Locked On Podcast Network is that there's a host for every single team out there. So whether it's generating previews for games like major matchups like the Kings and Indiana Pacers or whatnot, there's always somebody to talk to. And Tony East and I have done a lot of crossover pods. Of course, we've done a crossover pod last year during the big Tyrese Haliburton, Domantas Sabonis trade. And it's only right that Tony and I come together again before this massive game happening inside the Golden 1 Center. Now, what's cool is Tony's actually in town. So he's going to be experiencing a Kings game, a Kings home game for the first time. He's going to experience the Golden 1 Center for the first time. I'm looking forward to meeting him in person for the first time and hanging out with him at the game tomorrow. But we had to connect today to preview this massive game and get kind of the viewpoints and the storylines from both sides heading into this one. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Tony, some good Pacers perspective, of course, some good Kings perspective. If you want to respond to anything, you can do so on Twitter at MattGeorgeSac. You can email me, MattGeorgeSports.com. Leave your thoughts in the YouTube comment section down below. But for right now, here is our Locked On Pacers and Kings crossover, Tony East and myself, Matt George.
Locked On crossover time for a huge game. Pacers Kings tonight. Pacers coming off of a huge high against the Lakers. The Kings have slipped a little, but still are awesome this year. Both teams wildly exceeding expectations. And yet that has nothing to do with why this game has so much buzz around it. It's because Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield back in the Golden 1 Center. Domantas Sabonis playing against his former team for the first time. Matt George from Locked On Kings. Tony East from Locked On Pacers here to talk all things about that game. Matt, how amped are you? Because I just saw the Golden 1 Center for the first time, and it looks ready for a fun one.
Well, I'll tell you this. This is one of the most emotional matchups in the NBA that nobody outside of Indiana or Sacramento really truly understands. I mean, a lot of people have weighed in on this trade, and it's typically cited more towards Indiana and less towards the Sacramento Kings. How could you trade Tyrese Haliburton? What are the Kings doing? They're insane. Even J.J. Redick had Tyrese Haliburton on his podcast, and the result was the same thing from that conversation. The reality is both teams have significantly improved from this trade. The Indiana Pacers are off to a really good start. The Sacramento Kings, even though they're on a three-game skid, they're one game over 500, nearly 20 games into the season. So both teams are in really good spots, and I think it's fitting now to see the two butt heads clash against each other. And while this game doesn't necessarily decide who wins the trade, I call it a really good progress report.
Yeah, the Kings are 10-9 and have the third-ranked offense, and the Kings haven't been over 500 after 19 games. They had a big winning streak earlier this season. Sabonis and Fox look fantastic together. Fox specifically looks terrific this season. I mean, I'll let you speak to all this, but you know, it's hard to call that a loss for a team that hasn't made the franchise since I was 9, 8. I can't remember. And that's not a shot at the Kings. It's just their goals are different than other teams' goals. And I think that is the part of this trade that gets lost every single time someone talks about it. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Like the Sacramento Kings are in a win now window, which seems silly for a team that has not made the playoffs in 16 seasons, but that's exactly why it's a win now scenario. This team is tired of losing. This team is trying to capitalize right now. Jobs are on the line right now, even with a first year head coach. And even though Mike Brown came in knowing that this team had some growing pains, that they needed to, it was going to be a process to improve defensively. Like, Mike Brown is here to bring what he's learned about winning basketball from the Golden State Warriors and establish that here in Sacramento. And to this point, he has done that. The Sacramento Kings made a move to maximize what they had on their roster with the Tyrese Haliburton trade, and that was giving De'Aaron Fox something that he has not had at any point during his career, which is a solid supporting cast, even with Tyrese Halliburton here, and people will misunderstand. There is not a disconnect between Fox and Halliburton. The two are very good friends. That was not the issue. The two did not or struggled to coexist on the floor together because they're so ball dominant, and rightfully so. I mean, two point guards can work in certain systems. In Sacramento, it was not working. Now, I know the Kings were also keeping an eye on what Fox's value was like, but people have to understand it wasn't just the Kings trading Tyrese Halliburton for the sake of picking De'Aaron Fox over Tyrese. Tyrese's value is higher, not because he's better than De'Aaron Fox, but because of his contract situation and him having such a high upside. So people have all these disconnects. People have all these misnomers and these ideas about this trade that just aren't accurate. The Kings made a move to give De'Aaron Fox a big man to play with that he has never had at any point during his career, and De'Aaron has responded to that. And unfortunately, in order to get talent like DeMontis Sabonis, you have to give up talent. Tyrese Halliburton was a very difficult decision for Monty McNair to move on from. That was Monty's first ever draft pick as a general manager in the NBA. So it's a move certainly with risk, and the risk hasn't played out. DeMontis Sabonis hasn't re-signed with the Kings yet. So still the judgment of this trade is up in the air. But as of right now, the Sacramento Kings have clearly benefited from this move, and they do not regret giving up Tyrese Halliburton, and certainly don't regret giving up Buddy Hield.
Yeah, it's hard for me to argue with any of that, and especially because Buddy was 1 foot out the door for a while at the end of that Sacramento tenure, especially because he got 2 seconds from being traded to the Lakers the summer before it actually happened, right? So Halliburton, of course, being the headliner, having a nice season for the Pacers, but I want to ask you about Sabonis from the Pacers side. Obviously, I've seen him play 95% of his career games, even some with the Kings, but he's surging recently. We talked about this on Lockdown NBA. You said, you know, that he's not fouling out as much. That's really helped him be on the court more, put up better stats. But even looking at his numbers, like, he's shooting less often per game, yet he's at his most efficient from the field. He's still rebounding like crazy. His assists are at a career best number, or at least right at it. I think per minute it is a career best number. Like, what's gotten into him? Why is he all of a sudden so much more effective and being a leader for this Kings team?
Well, I think it's because the Sacramento Kings have surrounded both De'Aaron Fox and DeMontis Sabonis with willing shooters, willing scorers, and willing passers at the same time. Now, make no mistake about it, De'Aaron Fox is still the star of this team. Like, there was maybe a little bit of a question of when the Kings traded DeMontis Sabonis, or rather traded for Sabonis. Okay, it's a two-time All-Star coming in. This guy has better credentials. He's made the playoffs. He's done more than De'Aaron Fox in his career. So you could argue, is DeMontis Sabonis the better player? Is this Sabonis' team now? I think it was a silly argument, a silly conversation to have. But DeMontis Sabonis is arguably the most important player on the Sacramento Kings. And Sabonis does something that no other player other than two-time MVP Nikola Jokic does in the league, which is rebound at an extremely high rate, but he is an incredibly good and willing passer. So much so that the entire offensive system that, like you said, is third in the NBA runs strictly through Sabonis. He has a great two-man game with almost everybody on the roster. He shows it off on different nights. Last night or the other night in the Kings' loss to the Phoenix Suns, he had a great two-man game with Malik Monk. Of course, he and De'Aaron Fox have connected. He and Kevin Huerter have looked like they played with each other for 15 years. Like, DeMontis fits with so many players and gets opportunities for so many players, and they respond by, one, they're actually hitting shots for him, thank goodness, to get those assist numbers up. But two, they're willing to give the ball back to him. Now, at times, Tony, I actually want DeMontis Sabonis to be a little more selfish. Like, on this past game, he went 8 of 10 from the field. You love him shooting 80%. It's like, shoot more, especially if on a night that De'Aaron Fox is struggling. And Fox has been struggling a little bit during this 3-game slide that the Sacramento Kings are on. But I can't really tell you specifically what Mike Brown and the Kings have done to cause this resurgence, or I guess could be a word, of DeMontis Sabonis's career. All I can say is that Sabonis is the foundation of what the Sacramento Kings are doing, and they've put him in a position to excel. And while he hasn't been phenomenal, I would say he's naturally gifted and naturally fits what the Kings are trying to do.
Yeah, 8 of 10 against the Suns reminds me of one of my favorite things I would talk about with Sabonis a lot, and that's when he plays against young bigs. You know, I don't know if there's an age cutoff, but there's an age of bigs in the NBA and lower that they grew up and didn't have to practice post defense because of how basketball is played now. So they go against Sabonis, they just don't know what to do. And Ayton is a good player. He's probably the best one of the guys in that class who is good, but is like not good at defending post-ups at all. And a lot of these young bigs keep coming in the league and have no idea And Sabonis has games like that. I absolutely love those.
And oddly, it's not necessarily post offense. Like, I'd like to see a little more post office offense from Domantas Sabonis at times, because he scores mainly in pick and roll. And that's what he was doing with his two-man game with Malik Monk. Malik was either dropping off the ball. Domantas had like three or four monster dunks the other night. And it's like, okay, we know that's part of his game, but sometimes I wish the Kings would like get a clear out, get a mismatch, and let Domantas Sabonis work on the block a little bit. I know the NBA has gone away from that, but he can get you 4 to 6 points a night just in those possessions alone.
So I was walking by Golden One today, and their promo for the game of Pacers Kings has Sabonis on the graphic. You'll never guess who the Pacers player is. It was Miles Turner.
Whoa. Which is,
yeah, not Halliburton, but very fitting for me to see that after years and years and years of hearing about what that would be like if they ever split that pair up, and they have. But to you, to close out this Kings portion of the trade segment, do you think Sabonis will take this game up a notch? Like, will it mean something more to him going against Turner, going against his former team, or is it just going to be, nope, Pacers on the schedule, let's do it?
I don't think one can ever say it's just Pacers on the schedule, just another game. But I genuinely believe that Sabonis' number one goal is to win. I think that's all he cares about. I think that's all the Sacramento Kings care about at this point. And at this point, the Indiana Pacers are in the way. I think if we're talking about the most emotional charge in this game, it's for Tyrese Halliburton. And it rightfully so. He's returning to Sacramento. He has been asked many times, I think asked too much about this trade. He's been very open about how this trade has, like how it was disrespectful or used as motivation or frustrated him, how he has not forgiven the Kings organization. He loves the fans, and the fans are going to show him that love back. All the emotional charge in this game is for Tyrese Halliburton, maybe a little bit for Buddy Hield, who I expect to put up like 36 shots in this game just because he's Buddy freaking Hield. But I would honestly say
in the first quarter,
for Domantas Sabonis, I think there is, of course, there's going to be an extra value to this game, but I don't think you're going to see a Sabonis that says, okay, give me the ball, it's my time. Like, that's not who Sabonis is. That's not how the Kings operate. I think Sabonis is primarily motivated by winning basketball games. Today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is brought to you by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car that you want, whenever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Think like Airbnb or Vrbo, but for cars. You can browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion across the US, UK, Canada, and Australia on any budget. Book a spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip. You can test drive that new electric vehicle that you've had your eye on to see how it fits your everyday life. Maybe you're just traveling from point A to point B and you need an economic car, an economy car on a budget that helps you just get there as the most efficient, cost-efficient way. Or if you're having a big night, like a birthday party, a prom, something like that, maybe you want to get a classic or luxury car for a special event, you can get that as well. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms and conditions and exclusions do apply. Forget boring rental cars. Find your drive at Turo.com.
Now we got to flip to the Pacers side. Matt, what do you want to think about on the Pacers side of the trade? We'll get to the specifics of this game later. But from the Halliburton side, the Hield side, you know, what stands out to you about the way the Pacers have played with those two guys?
Well, the first question that I have actually doesn't really involve the Indiana Pacers team and more has to involve the fan base, because this game has a major emotional charge for Kings fans. Like, there, Tyrese could run for mayor in Sacramento and win by a landslide. Like, he's such a popular figure here. He's such a likable guy. And I know you've experienced this now, Tony, in covering him and working with him. When you ask Tyrese Halliburton a question, you get genuine interest from him. He listens to you. He talks to you. And he's very open with the things that he has to say. Tyrese is an extremely likable young man. He's also very bright. Tyrese was a fan favorite here, to say the absolute least, and would have been arguably one of the most liked Kings of all time had he spent his entire career in Sacramento like he thought he was going to, and many Kings fans were hoping that he would. So there's a lot of emotional charge for Sacramento Kings fans in this game. What's the emotional charge like for Pacers fans?
Well, I think the one difference here is it's in Sacramento. Like, when Sabonis plays in Indy, I think there will be a little more to it, which could have happened last year, but I can't remember if he was a close contact or tested positive, but he missed that game in health and safety protocol. So that hasn't happened yet. I think that, you know, Jeremy Lamb and Justin Holiday, I think both played, they both moved on from this discussion. I do think there's something to it, though, from the fan perspective, to see it happen. I think part of the issue is, too, there's going to be a hangover from Pacers fans who just saw the wildest game the Pacers have had all season on Monday against the Lakers, where they came back from 17 down in the fourth quarter and hit a buzzer beater over LeBron James. You know, that kind of thing will hype you up for a couple of days. I think that everybody kind of had a moment to like, oh yeah, they play Sabonis tomorrow. So I don't think it's as high of a buzz as it is for the Kings, but I think some of it is the Lakers game Monday, and some of it is the fact that it's in Sacramento. So yeah, they're going against Sabonis, but it's not like all these fans can go see him and see the guy that they rooted for years, because like Haliburton, he was really popular here. Like the classic style, you know, that he plays, even though he does – classic's the wrong word. You know what I'm saying, though. You know, like the toughness style, like all kinds of fans like him because he's good and he plays that like just beat the guy in front of you kind of style. Fans really gravitate to that. So he was really popular here, even though – there was the constant Sabonis-Turner riff, tiff, I don't know, some word for that. So he was still really popular that whole time. So I think that there will be a bit more intrigue than normal, of course. You know, people asking Buddy and Tyrese about it before they left for the road trip, but not as much as when Sabonis comes to Indy. That's when I think it will be about the same level.
There is a fear in Sacramento. Excuse me. There's a fear in Sacramento that this game will make – I won't say necessarily the Kings organization, because I think they've pretty much moved on. But there's a fear in Sacramento that Tyrese Haliburton is going to put together a game or put together a stat line that makes Kings fans just feel sick to their stomach and regret the move. Is there a fear in Indiana that DeMontis Sabonis can put together a performance that Pacers fans go, damn, I miss that or I need that?
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because – You asked that question. Like, part of the motivations for both teams making the trade was, you know, Haliburton and Fox are guards, right? They can't both have the ball. And Turner and Sabonis, they got asked about each other for 5 years, right? Can you coexist? Now, we said, yes, we're close. We want to make it work and all this stuff. But at the same time, they're finally going against the guy that, you know, in both of their cases, that you and I are media. I don't know if we both have done this a lot, but at times all media at some point has pitted them against, air quotes, not like literally against each other, but just like comparing the two or the numbers with without them, whatever you want to say, to the point that like, yeah, you know, I think that Haliburton could want to do that against Fox, not because he doesn't like Fox. I think, like you said earlier, I think him and Fox are very close, but just to go, you know, go, hey, you guys traded the wrong guy. And in the same case, I think for Turner and Sabonis, where it's like they had all these questions for years and years. Turner's having a resurgent year. Sabonis is awesome. I don't know that any of them are thinking this at all. But to me, just human nature perspective, it feels like they almost have to kind of feel that way, right? Just given how the trade optics went down.
I'm very interested in the De'Aaron Fox versus Tyrese Haliburton matchup in this game. De'Aaron has been on a slide as of late. Tyrese is coming off of a, what was it, like 20-something point, 14 assists or 12 assist performance, and he had the game-winning assist against the Lakers. Like, he's been putting up unbelievable numbers, and doesn't surprise anybody here in Sacramento. We know how good of a player Tyrese Haliburton is. We also know that Tyrese Haliburton struggles defensively. In your mind, I'm hoping from a Sacramento perspective that this is a De'Aaron Fox bounce back game. And I think there might be a little bit of charge for De'Aaron, like, okay, I'm not going to let Tyrese come in here and make my own fans regret trading him over me. So I expect De'Aaron to be aggressive, also for him, his own sake, to work his way out of this funk, because the Kings need him to right now. Will Tyrese Haliburton be defending De'Aaron Fox? Because if so, I think De'Aaron Fox is going to abuse Tyrese.
Maybe. The Pacers get really tricky with their defensive matchups, right? Like, if Andrew Nembhard or Nesmith starts, maybe they defend De'Aaron Fox. But that said, again, like, I don't want to speak for these guys. Like, you know, they're humans. It's their words. But like, if it means something to them, they'll guard the guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's how many players are. So if the Pacers season as it has been is any indication, like, they played the Nets last week and like Buddy Hield guarded KD, and I think Haliburton guarded Simmons, and Nesmith guarded Kyrie. Like, they just cross all that stuff up and say, you know, whatever we feel like is the best is where we're going to put the guys. So maybe that's Haliburton on Herder and, you know, or Haliburton on Murray and Hield on Herder. I don't know what it will shake out to be. But that said, when there is a little more personal to it, it could change a little bit. And I expect there will be some possessions, you know, after misses, when there's semi-transition, things like that, that they'll end up on each other anyway, to the point that it won't matter too much, but it will be a part of the game, obviously.
I have two questions involving Buddy Hield. The first one is, Buddy's having a really good season. I've seen his numbers. I've watched some of his games. I think Buddy's doing really, really well for the Indiana Pacers. I also think Rick Carlisle has done a good job optimizing Buddy Hield, which was a problem for Luke Walton and past coaches, Dave Yeager, here in Sacramento with Buddy. First question is, What do you think Buddy Hield is doing really well right now for the Indiana Pacers? What is working for Buddy Hield and the Pacers right now?
Yeah, I think he feels motivated in the role he has on this team, where he can kind of be himself, or what he thinks of himself as a player, where he just runs around the perimeter all the time and can attack on the catch and put pressure on the rim in ways that I don't know if he did or didn't feel like he had the, you know, ability to do this before, but he has more like autonomy in the stuff he's able to do instead of just feeling like a pure shooter. And that kind of translates to success kind of everywhere, right? He's shooting well from three, of course. I think he was third entering the Lakers game, but he also had an off night that night. So he's probably still third in the NBA and made threes this season, which of course it's going to be Steph and Malik Beasley. How did we talk about Malik Beasley here? But Malik Beasley is second in the NBA. But the thing that Buddy has done better since getting traded here is passing has been better. It's not even just assists. It's just like general passing. He's shooting 66% at the rim. I think he only exceeded that number with the Kings once. And his like 3 to 10 foot shot, he's got a little push shot he's added to his game that I think that he showed it some in the past, but has kind of been an added repertoire. So his 2-point percentage was, I think, as recently as last week, a career high. Right now, yeah, it still is. Okay. So that's another, like, he's just doing better finishing inside the arc. And that's kind of where his resurgence has come. And he's a little better on defense, I guess. I think he's just more engaged. You know, I don't want to say that he's like added skill on that end. So they can put him on Kevin Durant. And I talk about that game a lot, which is funny because through three quarters, Kevin Durant had 16 points. And then Kevin Durant scored 20 in the fourth quarter. So for three quarters, that looks great. And then for the last one, it didn't. So I think he's just a more engaged defender, but still kind of the same level. So there's a lot of little things that he's doing a little bit better. But in general, it's just I think he feels like he's in the right role for himself and he can play within his own skill set very well.
The other question I have about Buddy Hield, and this is more of a curiosity question, what does Buddy Hield do that drives you or drives Pacers fans crazy or makes you scratch your head? Is there anything that Buddy does that you're just like, damn it, Buddy? Because there were a lot of things here in Sacramento, so I'm curious if they're the same.
Honestly, if they exist. Well, this team is, I don't know, not really, you know. Like, it would be pretty easy for me to go, oh, he forces too many shots. So the thing he does a lot is he loses his guy in team defense situations, mm-hmm. right? I think that happened with the Kings a lot, too. But the trouble with saying, dang it, Buddy, or whoever, is the Pacers suck at that skill as a team in general. So sometimes it's like, well, someone's going to do it. You know, it's not like a specific frustration. That's the thing I think he is the most holes in his game is he gets ball watchier, gets too far away from his man and can't help the right way or close out or rotate all these things. Like he's okay on the ball, but that's where he really struggles. Like his shot selections has surprised me because with the Kings, that was frustrating at times. He has like, The thing, I guess this is, if you were a fan, you'd consider this frustrating. I don't really care about this, but like, you know, Buddy Hield could be 0 for 8 and he's going to think the next one's going in, right? So he's just going to keep shooting. I think some people could find that frustrating. I find that endearing in a player. And there's some players that they could make 100 in a row and I would think their next one's still not going to go in. Buddy Hield's the opposite, where he could miss a million in a row and I'm like, oh, he might make the next one. So it's not a problem. It's just he shoots no matter how he's feeling in a game. And I think that's endearing, but can be a negative.
This episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is also brought to you by LinkedIn. And these days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. Consider it like if you're a general manager of a business and you need a scout to help you find the best talent in the draft. That's what LinkedIn Jobs does. You can add your job in the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile and spread the word that you're hiring. And LinkedIn Jobs provides simple tools like screening questions that make it easy to focus on the candidates that you want with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview in a quick and who you'd like to hire in a quick and timely manner. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Well, the last thing I have for you, Tony, is another aspect of this game that I think is important that nobody's really talking about because of the Haliburton, Hield, Sabonis, Turner, all of those storylines. Keegan Murray versus Benedict Mathurin. Now, they play different positions, but I think they're the two most comparable rookies based off of situation. I think it's really difficult, at least from the Kings' perspective, it's very difficult to compare Keegan Murray to like Paolo Banchero, because Paolo gets all the opportunity he wants on a team that's not very good in the Orlando Magic. Like, and Paolo can just go out there and put up ridiculous numbers and is a shoe-in for Rookie of the Year, in my opinion. Kind of could say the same thing about Jaden Ivey with the Detroit Pistons. Benedict Mathurin has been playing really, really well, is ahead of Keegan Murray, I think, in the Rookie of the Year voting right now, or Rookie of the Year odds, and I think that's the way it should be. But Benedict Mathurin is also contributing to a team that is winning right now. Now, the Kings have more of a win expectation, I think, than the Indiana Pacers do, and I don't think that's far-fetched to say, or at least coming into the season. Maybe expectations have changed a little bit with how the Pacers have gotten off to this strong start. But I'm very intrigued, because Keegan Murray's been struggling. November has not been a kind month to Keegan after a really, really solid October. I'm very intrigued. They're not going to play necessarily one-on-one against each other, but we saw Murray versus Mathurin in the Summer League in Las Vegas. Again, they didn't really play against each other, so it wasn't really a charged matchup like Murray and Banchero, or Murray I'm blanking on his name from OKC, Chet Holmgren. What do you think about what we could see out of the rookie-on-rookie battle in this game?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, and I will open with Jaden Ivey, because the Pacers played the Pistons in October. It's their first win of the season. They beat Detroit. Mathurin had 27. Someone asked him after the game, Benedict, you know, was there something about going against someone picked above you that inspired you in this game? He's like, yes. You know, like I know the guys picked ahead of me. I want to do well against them. And I think all the classic draft stuff. But to say that after your third game, and to his credit, it was asked. Like, he was straight up asked. You know, it's not like he's just like, I'm going to say this thing about Jaden Ivey. He was asked directly about the draft, but he knows. Like, I think he knows Keegan Murray was picked ahead of him, and that will mean something to him, even though, because Murray starts and Mathurin doesn't, and like I said, the Pacers cross match like crazy, you never know who's going to be guarding who in this game. But yeah, I think it'll mean something to Mathurin, and I think for all the top, I don't know, eight picks, this is just, again, I'm guessing a lot of human nature stuff on this podcast, but they like to show that they're better than those guys, even from Murray's side, which I am curious if you have any insight. What has slipped with him? Because in Summer League and even in preseason, and the first Kings game I watched this year, Matt George, was when they played the Heat, and he had 22. And like every time I watched Keegan Murray, it felt like he never touched the ball. And then I look up and he had 22 points and 6 rebounds. Like, I didn't know how he did it. And then I look at his stats now and he's really struggling. So one, I think that, yes, there will be – that's another storyline among 1,000 in this game. But two, what's getting into Murray? Like, can he bounce back in this game where there is the rookie battle going on?
I think he's just in a slump, because what Keegan Murray's not doing is changing the way he plays. He's not forcing shots to try and work his way through it. He's still shooting in rhythm. He's still getting good looks. He had an 11-point game against the Phoenix Suns, and some of his decision-making, like he attacked the rim but didn't aggressively attack. He tried to avoid the contact, ended up getting blocked at the rim by DeAndre Ayton. Like, I think he needs to be a little more physical, and sometimes his decision-making is not the best. I think why he says he does not ever wane in confidence, I think his confidence has been rocked a little bit, and I think the speed of the NBA game has caught up to him a little bit. I also think there's a ton on his shoulders as a starter of a team with playoff expectations. And it's easy, I think, and feasible for a rookie to kind of get left behind and left in the dust a little bit. But a lot of it, I think, is just a shooting slump, because he's getting good looks. They're just not falling right now, when he could not miss a good look all summer and in preseason and in October. So I really think it's a slump that he's just working his way through. Hopefully we get to December and the Christmas spirit revitalizes him. Also, for those who don't know, he's dealing with some off the court issues, a pretty significant illness to his grandmother, who he's very close with. So that, imagine starting your NBA career, your dreams coming true, you leave home. And you're playing and starting your NBA career, and you're hearing about all this stuff going on at home involving a loved one that you care about. So he's not using that as an excuse. Nobody's using that as an excuse, but it's impossible to say that doesn't affect someone. So there's no reason to panic about Keegan Murray, but yeah, he hasn't been very good. And I think the most concerning part about Keegan is this slump kind of started while the Kings were surging. So it's like, okay, is he getting left behind a little bit? I don't think there's any reason to panic too much. I think Keegan Murray's going to be just fine. But if you were to say who's been the better rookie between Benedict Mathurin and Keegan Murray, it's not even a, it's not a debate at this point. And that's fair. Like, it's totally fair. It's not a debate. It's Benedict Mathurin. And that's the way it is. But ultimately, how Keegan Murray is going to be judged is he a starter on a team that that ends a playoff drought? If he is, it's a successful rookie campaign, regardless of where he is in the rookie of the year standings.
Yeah, Mathurin has been ridiculous for Kings people listening who haven't caught him. I mean, he can get to the line like a vet already and shoot the ball extremely well. Like, those are two very efficient skills. Matt, to end this, give me 30 seconds on a guy we haven't talked about at all yet who's going to kill the Pacers in this game, who's been good for the Kings this year. And I'm going to guess you're going to say Malik Monk, but I'll let you answer the question.
Oh, God. I mean, how much time do you got? I mean, it's a toss-up. It genuinely is a toss-up between Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter. Because both of them are such weapons. Like, and we're talking about the two shooting guards that the Kings replaced Buddy Hield with, Pacers Muse, in case you left that off of your tweet. like, the reality is both of those guys have been really, really good for the Kings. Malik Monk is that spark plug off the bench that can really get going. Kevin Huerter has been lights out shooting from three-point range, although he has struggled during this three-game losing streak for the Kings. The Kings have struggled shooting the basketball, period, during this three-game losing streak, so that's something I expect them to try and correct. So either of those guys can really punish the Pacers. And what I was going to say, Tony, to wrap this up is – I think both fan bases can look at the other team and see the amount of weapons and go, oh God. Like, I think the Pacers have to worry about Sabonis. They have to worry about Fox, Huerter, Monk, even Keegan Murray to some extent. I think the Kings have to look at the Pacers and worry about Turner, worry about Halliburton, worry about Hield, worry about Mathurin. Like, there's so many weapons on either side.
How dare you forget the hero, Andrew Nembhard.
That's, you know what? He should have been the guy that I led with. Regardless, like, these teams are so deep, and that's what makes them so fun. I think this game is a complete coin toss. I expect the Sacramento Kings to win, mostly because they need to win to end this slide, and they're on their home floor. But I think this game is a complete coin toss, and if it's not close at the end, we're all being robbed, because we deserve a game that either goes to overtime or is decided by a couple points.
Yeah, neutral site, I'd give this game a spread of zero. Like, they're close in talent. The supercharged emotions add to it. Like, it's going to be a game and a half, so the home court advantage, I think, is going to matter a little for the Kings in this one. But we'll see. You know, it could be one of those games where one of these guys who we just talked about for a long time gets a little out of it, forces it. You know, that can be tricky going against your old team for the first time. Matt, get us out of here.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us on this crossover episode of Locked On Kings and Locked On Pacers. We'll see which show and which team is victorious after this game. I wouldn't call this a rivalry necessarily, but there's a lot of emotional charge, so it'll be exciting. Tony, I'm glad you're here in Sacramento to experience the energy inside the Golden 1 Center so you can tell your Pacers fans about it. And I think these are going to be two teams, ultimately, that NBA fans outside of Indiana and Sacramento are going to be wanting to pay attention to consistently. If they're not your league pass teams already, make them your league pass teams. I'm expecting a great game.
100% agreed. Matt George is on Twitter at Matt George Sack, SAC. I'm on Twitter at T East NBA. Follow our respective shows, Locked On Pacers, Locked On Kings, and hear the recap from both of our sides tomorrow. Because again, there's gonna be a lot to talk about from this game, including potentially some tribute videos. We'll see what happens. We'll both be there to break it all down for you. Thanks everybody for listening. Have a great day. We'll see you soon.
Man, I am so ready for this game. So excited to watch this game with Tony inside the Golden 1 Center. If you're going to that game, please let me know. Would love to chat with you before the game. You can reach me on Twitter at MattGeorgeSack. Feel free to DM me there, or you can just tweet at me. You can email me, MattGeorgeSports@gmail.com. You can let me know in the YouTube comment section below, too. And any questions you have, comments you have about this matchup, are you scared to see Tyrese Halliburton back in his first real game in Sacramento? Is he going to play with a chip on his shoulder? Like, I think there's going to be a lot of emotions in this game. And it's also in many ways a game that the Sacramento Kings kind of need to win right now. So a lot of reasons to really tune into this game. Going to be a fun game to break down on the Locked On Kings post-game edition of the podcast coming tomorrow night. So I hope you'll tune in for that. Until then, my name is Matt George. If you've been listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.